This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
We've seen it for years, haven't we? When you see it on the news, the people that camp out for Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Nutters.
Well, I can remember years ago it was a different thing. It was a Bruce Springsteen concert. But my mate's brother, we was about...
My mate's brother's friend's aunt.
No, yeah. Me and my mate... It's the Robbo. Yeah. We was about 19, 20 at the time. So his big brother, big Springsteen fan, paid me and... Me and Robbo to camp out all night to get tickets.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a horrendous experience.
Where?
I'll never do it again.
Where was it?
Not even for money.
On the pavement?
Yeah, it was like, you know, basically we didn't sleep, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's awful.
It was just horrid.
Is it?
By the time we got the tickets, it was about, I don't know, 8:45 in the morning. You'd been up all night and you're all dishevelled and everyone around you's smelly.
Stinky.
And it's all just horrible.
No.
I wouldn't want to do it.
No, it's funny. That sort of reminds me of coming home from a nightclub, you know, like 6 in the morning.
I remember doing that.
And the birds are chirping.
Oh, that was horrible.
Sun's come up.
I could particularly remember. I mentioned it the other day. The Warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
You do Faces.
Faces nightclub.
And then if you were brave and you really wanted a party on, you'd go to the Warehouse in Edmonton.
Oh, dear.
And let me tell you something.
Yeah.
It was nasty in there.
People were...
I remember standing next to one bloke in the warehouse, and I'm standing, and I just remember looking at him, and his face was contorted. He couldn't speak. Okay, mate. Yeah, all right.
Wasn't really listening to the music.
I don't think
not
so.
Not really. I don't think there's many people that are like that when they're camping out at Wimbledon.
I hope not. No, I do hope not.
I always see him. You see him on the news, and there's a long line of them camping out, and you think, "Wow, really?
Ugh.
Is it? I mean, is it worth it?"
Well, a friend in here, Guy Watts, who does the cricket, Guy Dog, who does the Drive Time. Brilliant, love the Guy Dog. He camped out last week.
He's a young man camping.
He's
out
a young
fine.
Fella and a nice tan, look great, didn't he?
Yeah, there you go. All right, so some people do it.
Yeah,
but listen, let's jump onto the cricket because we will come back to Wimbledon. In fact, just before we do jump onto Formula One, I just want to say. What a feel-good that was, winning the cricket. Just, how did it make you feel? Just unbelievable. Because we always sort of, we had it with the women's football team. We sort of fell at the last hurdle.
Yes.
And now we're in a final or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So we at least we got to the final.
Yeah. And listen, one of our other great sportsmen is Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, God,
He wins every week.
However, you know, we say, it's boring, but he's British.
He's British.
It'd be even more boring if he wasn't British, wouldn't it?
It would, actually.
Let's face it.
It would. Listen, we're joined by a friend of the show now, and he's wonderful. He's given us some great insight over the past months. Peter Windsor, Formula One journalist and former Williams team manager. How are you, Peter?
I'm very well, mate. Yeah, happy to be here at Silverstone. Scene of many great Williams victories in the past.
Wow.
Talking of Brits doing well. Yeah, no, it's good.
And, of course, they've got the contract till 2023, which is fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful for the British fans. It's wonderful for motorsport in general because this is where Formula One began back in 1950. The first ever World Championship race was staged at Silverstone, and it was attended by the King and the Queen, 150,000 people. It was an amazing occasion. For Silverstone not to be part of the World Championship was unthinkable, really. And so it's wonderful that we have a new five-year extension.
Yeah, I mean, how does it compare? Like we said, we were talking about it. We said a lot of the Grand Prix now, they're always in the sun. They all look like, you know, it's always nice. The fact that we are sort of half missed some of these rainy days of Grand Prix, you know, where they couldn't see anyone in front of them. And you sort of half expect it with Silverstone, don't you?
Well, that's right. I mean, nobody's ever confident about the weather. I was talking to one of the engineers yesterday. These guys pore over all the radar months, weeks, days in advance. And they're saying, oh, no, it's not going to rain. It's going to be okay. But looking right now, there's a big dirty cloud right over the paddock area.
Seriously?
So, drivers like Lewis Hamilton have been there, done that, can never predict what's going to happen at Silverstone. And that's why they're so good, because he can react to all these changing variables that take place on race day, and everybody else kind of gets fixed into doing something one way, whereas Lewis has got this ability just to be able to go to all different parts of his repertoire, and wonderful to watch in that respect.
So there are certain drivers that are much better at driving in the wet.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's all to do with feel. You put your palm on the steering wheel rather than your fingers, and you drive it through the feel of your palms, through the seat of your pants, and you look for bits of road where there's more grip, and it may not be where the normal traditional racing line would be. In fact, it usually is not, and Lewis, again, is just a class act there. Monza in the wet a couple of years ago, he got the pole by over a second and a half, I think, which is a huge margin in Formula One. And that was teeming rain. Nobody could see what was going on, least of all Lewis. He was just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have the tyres changed for wets? Does it make it a little... Because obviously you've got the slicks and you've got the wets, but have they made it so that there's not as much spray? Or how have they changed it over the years so you don't get so much?
Well, it's evolved. I mean, it's evolved in many ways. I mean, there was a point when everybody ran the same tyres in the wet and the dry, which is as we do on the road. That's why we have treads on our tyres on the road, just in case it rains. If it never rained, we'd always have slick tyres on the road as well, because it gives you more grip. So we had those in Formula One. And then they started to build specialist slick tyres to go really quickly in the dry, which meant they had to build specialist wet tyres. We're now in a situation with Pirelli having a monopoly of tyre supply, there's no other competitors in the tyre market here, that we make it relatively easy for Pirelli. And when it's really, really heavy rain, they don't race. They either postpone the race or they'll do a lot of laps behind the safety car until the track gets a little bit drier. And generally speaking, we use a tyre called an intermediate as distinct from a full wet tyre. It's unusual to see the full wet in operation these days.
Oh, really?
But the intermediate's a good tyre. You can do quite a lot of laps on that. But if the track dries out quickly, it'll go off in, you know, 5 or 6 laps.
Yeah.
So going on to the Sunday when it starts, could they have done, you know, because it started the same day
as the cricket
and the tennis.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to lose viewers because of that?
I do, and I think it's insane, to be honest. I think the programming and the scheduling is just ridiculous.
When they're
putting the calendar out, they don't look at any other sports.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's one of the criticisms of life in general. Everybody's too focused on their own thing these days, partly because of the internet and because there's so much information. And nobody takes global views anymore. I mean, the only thing you can say, at least it doesn't clash with the British Open golf. But, you got the Wimbledon final, you got the cricket, you know, it's just insane.
What are the bosses thinking, Joe? I mean, they could have done more, surely.
Well, to be honest with you, I think this is a legacy of the Bernie Ecclestone era, and I think he quite enjoyed putting the Formula One race at Silverstone on clashing with Wimbledon, because he wasn't particularly keen on the race promotion side of Silverstone, because they didn't make a lot of money out of it, the Formula One industry, that is. And so I think he deliberately generated this clash. But I don't understand why the new owners of Formula One didn't look at that, rather than just inheriting Bernie's date for, you know, this weekend in July, where they didn't put it a week later, at least, to get it away from Wimbledon and the World Cup final. So, you know, that's just lack of forethought, lack of foresight, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of planning there. But it's you know, it's not untypical. We have Formula E races clashing with Grand Prix. We have big sports car races clashing with Formula One. The calendar itself is all over the place. I mean, we go from Australia to Bahrain to China. Why don't we go China, Australia, China, Bahrain? You know, it makes more sense. Nothing makes sense. And we go to Canada mid-year, but then we go back again for Mexico and America. Why not do the three North American races in one hit? You know?
None
of it makes sense.
Do you know what I was thinking? On Sunday, we'll do like we used to do. The one that we don't fancy, we'll tape it. Do you remember taping?
I remember taping,
Press play and record at the same time. That's what
we'll do. But we've got Friday practice today, but it's Nadal Federer today, is it not?
Yes.
At Wimbledon?
Looking forward to that.
That is just going to be the match of the century.
Wow.
We're looking forward to that.
It's not going to be a disappointment. You know when you get one that's going to rule? I hope that it is as classic as 2008, because, I mean, that was incredible.
It's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the sad thing is that it's not for the final, isn't it? The sad thing is for the semi, and that, you know, that's kind of takes a little bit of the edge off it, I think.
It's
a shame it's not the final. But having said that, you know, I'm sure Novak Djokovic is very happy.
Saying that, you know, the other great sporting hero is Lewis Hamilton. And is there anyone that's going to compete with him on Sunday? Because obviously, if he wins this, it'll be a record for the most British GP wins, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the only competition Lewis has got actually, in reality, is from his car. Whether that's going to be fully reliable and give him the performance he needs, tyre-wise, handling-wise, everything else-wise, power-wise. In Austria, there was a bit of a glitch for Mercedes. They were running a bit hot. They're not used to running amongst all the other cars when they're on their own, and they usually are out in front. But when they are in traffic, they do tend to run a bit hot. And I think here they're assuming they're going to be at the front. They don't seem to have made any mods. So, as I say, the only thing that's going to beat Lewis is his car this weekend. And if the car's great, for sure Lewis Hamilton's going to win it. He's just brilliantly quick around here, and so is the car.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a few more about Silverstone, obviously. But in fact, there was just one I wanted to say. There was a few years ago when it rained so bad, because I had an event on at the same time, and I know that all the cars got stuck in the car park. It was probably about 7-8 years ago, wasn't it?
It was the worst
weather ever.
Terrible. And there's a lot of camping here. There's a lot of grass. There's a lot of potential mud. And it could still happen if there's a lot of rain. But it's not only the spectators. It's also on the track. I mean, Silverstone is a very difficult circuit when it rains because there's not a lot of camber on the road. Right. And there's a lot of what we call them puddles, but they like to call it standing water, you know, engineering speak for puddle. Yeah. But there's a lot of puddles. And when you hit a puddle at high speed, basically you're out of control. The car just becomes a skateboard on ice. You're lucky if you don't hit anything. And that, you know, Silverstone's just been resurfaced. It's like a black carpet around the
track. Is it?
Like brand new track.
Is it?
And of course, that in itself is, you know, an issue, because if it's really hot, Mercedes, with the amount of grip they've got, could maybe put too much temperature and energy through the tyres just without even trying. And
really?
That could affect them. So we need to see what the weather's going to be like on Sunday. But at the moment, it's supposed to be the usual slightly unpredictable, cloudy, with a bit of sunshine, some weather. You know.
At least, but no rain predicted.
No, at the moment, no. But we just had a few drops. You know, there's no rain predicted today, but I was just walking into the track, a few drops. So nothing to stop anything, but...
No.
You know, as I say, there's a black cloud heading towards me. Yeah.
Well, let's hope there's not a black cloud over England over the weekend.
It'll probably snow Sunday.
Yeah. Looking forward to it, though, Peter. Always fascinating to talk to you.
Yeah.
Talk to you, of course, I should think, on Monday. Absolutely. Peter Windsor there, Formula One journalist and former Williams team manager.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Listen, I've started off really bad this morning. As I said to you, I woke up, two speeding fines, at the same camera in the same week, one in my car and one in my wife's car. That's not nice.
Woke up to that.
Woke up also, checked my account. Thames Water had taken £450 out of my account without telling me.
No. Well, they're not going to tell you, are they? They're just going to take it.
So not a good morning. And you do start to think, like things like that will get you down. And then you have to look at some other people and think, hang on a minute, you've got a far worse time than me. You might have woke up with 10 times worse news than me.
Listen, that's for sure. That's a given. Yeah,
but it's relative to what you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
A study has revealed that the top 10 things we do to make us feel and live happier.
Yeah.
Forget winning the lottery, walking down the aisle, or having your first child. It's the little things in life that make us feel good every day and get us up in the morning.
Sleep, sunshine, talking, taking a walk, which top of the list of things that give us a sense of joy, along with some unexpected ones like no queue at the supermarket or a free coffee. Joining us is Samantha Clark. She's a happiness coach for Feel Good Britain. Samantha.
Hello.
Do you feel good this morning?
I do, yes.
I feel good.
What happened that made you feel good this morning? A free coffee or?
I think it's a mixture of definitely a good. I have a turmeric latte. Sorry, not coffee.
I do apologise.
Yeah. It's all right. It's all right. And just being around some good people. Yeah, you know, always helps.
Absolutely, it does.
Do you know what, Samantha? It's really weird as. When you're younger, I used to feel sometimes you could look ahead to something and think, do you know what? I've got something to look forward to. And there'd be a thing. And when you were a bit younger, you used to think, life is good. And I remember a couple of years ago, I was travelling home, a late night gig with my guitarist, and sort of saying to him, you know, this is probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I went, are you happy? And he went, I've got to tell you, I used to be a lot happier when I was younger. Because you didn't have so much to think about.
Right.
Have we got too much to think about now?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are probably burdened a lot with technology, and there's so much news, and everyone's broadcasting about their lives, and there's a lot of information coming at us, and I think our brains don't have that space to just chill out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think one thing that I loved about, you know, this research from BP is that it's the simple things. If we strip it right back, it's the simple things that make us feel good.
It's really true, like, that, you know. Didn't I hear that you're at your happiest when you're about 20, and then a big leap, apparently it's 68. Is that right?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Did you hear that?
I think that there's a lot of pressure, I guess, when we're in our 30s and 40s to buy houses, to get married, to have kids. And there's a lot of financial strain. And through the research, we found that, you know, 27% of people said that what gets them down is definitely financial issues.
Yeah.
And so, you know, hopefully when we're in our 60s, we're kind of at a slower pace in life and we get to enjoy things. And when you're younger, you don't have the same risks and responsibilities because your parents are looking after you or
yes.
your caregivers. And so it's there's a lot of pressure on us, I guess, in the kind of middle 30s, 40s.
50s now, I suppose.
Yeah.
50s is the new 40s now, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. It's all pushing backwards, isn't it?
What is it that, what's the main thing that sort of people get down about? Obviously, you said the financial things, but is there, like you said, social media put such a strain on us that we didn't have. I mean, for instance, I'm just looking at my son. He's only 10. He's just started using a little bit of social media, and already he's complaining about various bits and pieces that he wasn't complaining about before he was on there.
Yeah, I think we can get sucked into the vortex that is social media, and I was really happy to see in the research that it was quite low down on the list of things that people find that make them happy, you know, receiving a like or a comment. And you know it's unfortunate that kids are probably subjected to a lot of bullying or comparisons on social media, and actually it's like taking the time out to put that down and think, if that's not serving me, how could I go out and, you know, look after myself in a different way, or give somebody a compliment, or have more of that human connection. And I think it's just nice if we can pass on the baton to somebody else, you know, give somebody else a treat versus just consuming lots of media that doesn't work for us.
Yeah, I mean, what about the... okay, so the cricket at the moment, everyone's happy. We're in the final. We thrashed Australia. Everyone's walking around saying, we got our name on the cup. Now, of course, we've got the final to go. If we do lose to New Zealand, which, of course, we won't, Samantha...
We won't.
But if we do, then there's a big, like there was last year with the semi-final. I mean, for 4 days, everybody was walking around, well, we're in the semi-finals of the World Cup, and then of course that big disappointment. How do we take care of that?
Do you know what? I've got one solution.
Go on.
I think that everyone should get themselves a BP Me reward scheme.
Yeah.
And so, if worst comes to worst.
Yes.
And we do lose. You get yourself some points when you pick up your fuel on your way to your friend's house to cry in your beer. And with your points, you can also get some chocolate, some coffee, some M&S vouchers, all the good stuff to brighten you up.
Well, chocolate always sorts you out.
So it sorts me out.
Always.
Do you know what? I went to see someone over a period of years. You know, I lost a few family members and stuff like that. And you do
get to
a point where things get you down. And one of the sort of things was to wake up in the morning and try and be thankful for everything you've got.
Yeah.
And look around and think, how would it be if I didn't have that and I didn't have that and didn't have that? Is that one of the key things that you sort of focus on?
Yes, I love that you said that, because that is a ritual that I do for myself and I encourage my clients to do as well. Every time you get up in the morning, think about the things that you're grateful for, really reflect on the stuff that made you happy the day before, throughout the week, and think, okay, how can I get more of that? And also, how can I be of service to other people, you know, because it's not just about filling up your own happiness tank. It's like, how could I help my partner today? Or what could I do to look after my son, or share with a friend in a different way, or just be a listening ear for somebody. And I think that is, it's just being grateful, you know, and being thankful for the fact that you're alive and you have a roof over your head and you've got people that, you know, love you and you both of you are doing work that you love. You know, you're cheery on a Friday.
Yeah, that's true. It's a funny one. Do you know what? We did a TV show years ago. God knows why they asked us to do this. It was on ITV, and it was called Rich and Famous, and it was this. With Beverly. Forget her name now. She interviewed us, and I did this piece with her, and off camera, she sort of said to me, you know, what is it that makes you happy? And I said, do you know what? I'll just give you this analogy. You might be at it, this. You might think this is good, Samantha, or you might think it's rubbish. But I used to say that looking forward to something is good. Something that's in the future, you go, well, actually, today's terrible, but do you know what? I've got that to look forward to. And I always liken it to the people on a holiday. They used to get the brochure, look through the brochure, pick the hotel, and then you're sort of getting ready for it, getting ready for the holiday. Even the night before, you're making silly little jokes that normally you wouldn't laugh about. And then you get to the airport and you moan about the airport, but really you're quite excited. You know, we've got an early start. And then you get on the plane, you get off the plane, you go, feel the heat. And then you get to the hotel and you get all your clothes out and you put them in the thing. You look down and go, there's a swimming pool.
Yeah.
You get down at the swimming pool, get the oil on yourself, and you get rubbed in, and everything, you lay there,
who rubs you in?
You just rub all the oil over.
Oh, right.
And then right at the end of it, you go, what day are we flying home?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was the looking forward to it.
Yes.
Was better than actually being there.
Of course.
Is that something you can use that, you know, sort of brightens your day up, if you like?
Yeah, I do. I think, do you know what? I think that kind of destination happiness, you know, where we're thinking about stuff in the future is good in small doses, because then it kind of leaves you always in the future and less in the present. And I think we have to take a moment and think, actually, right now, here and now, yes, I've got a holiday booked in a couple of weeks or a month. That's great. But right now, what also makes me happy? Yeah. And when we're on holiday, how can we also be present and be like, actually, I'm really enjoying this time away. I'm not thinking about going home. I'm not thinking about my flight. I'm actually loving the fact that the pool's down there and I'm going to get a beer in a minute.
Yeah. Samantha.
It's wonderful.
Can I see you privately? Anyway, listen. Samantha.
Well, I was thinking the same thing, because you do need, I think you do need a guru that sort of lifts you up a little bit.
I must ask you, Samantha, before we're going to have to go to a break in a second, but I must ask you, Samantha, now you're a happiness coach. How do you get to be a happiness coach?
How do I? Well, it's been many years of going through my own explorations of what makes me happy and what doesn't. And I do a lot of focus around happiness at work. And so I've had different work journeys, and I try and help companies create happy cultures and also help individuals find work they love.
What a wonderful, wonderful job you have.
Well, you made us happy.
Isn't it a wonderful job? And also, yesterday we were asking very, very quickly, we were asking your first day at work, because it was Frank Lampard's first day at Chelsea the other day. What was your first day at work like?
My first day at work. Well, which job or what client?
Your very first job.
My very first job. Do you know what? I think my co-worker was really, really happy, and she'd actually, I think, baked a cake as well.
Oh, wow. You had a great first day then.
I did, yeah.
There we are. Samantha Clark, thank you very much. Happiness coach, Feel Good Britain. She's made me very happy.
There you go.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
We are joined now by Jamie Burton, and we are going to be talking a bit of entertainment news. We had our old mate on the show earlier on, Tamer Hassan, who used to be our manager, strangely, and then he became an actor and starred in The Business, but his daughter is in Love Island. We're going to be talking about that. But we're going to start off with a bit of sad news.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With the death of Vinnie Jones' wife. Tell us a bit more about that, Jamie. Afternoon to you, by the way.
Afternoon to you. Can I just say, I love it when you play our jingle. It's one of my favourite things of the week.
Yes.
I enjoyed making it.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to kind of start off on a bit of a sad note, obviously, like Vinnie Jones, I'm sure, is you guys are fans of the show over
there as
well. Absolutely.
I love Vinnie Jones, yeah.
Yeah, his wife of 25 years passed away this week after what they say was a long illness. So, condolences to the family, which is terrible news. She's been with him you know, from his football playing days through to his Hollywood transformation as well. And yeah, it's very sad.
We met years ago. Did, yeah. And she was a lovely woman. And I've seen her in many, many documentaries that he did. And he was very happy with her. And our thoughts go out to Vinny and the rest of the family. It's just a terrible thing.
Yeah, 53.
I mean, that's no. I mean, I've coming up to 53 now. Now, listen. Also, I was very upset to hear that Denise Nickerson died. She was 62. Now, she was in one of my favourite films, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
And she played the one who goes purple.
Okay.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like a big violet, what is it, a big grape she turned into?
That's right, yeah. Brilliant, yeah, fantastic. But, she's the first, isn't she, of those kids tonight, yeah.
And what it about seems, yeah. this young Disney actor, Cameron Boyce, only 20?
Now, this was obviously the most shocking story of the week, I'd say. Cameron Boyce, just 20 years old. He's known as being a bit of a child actor. He was in the grown-up films with Adam Sandler, and then he's done a bit of a Disney transformation as well. He was in the Descendants, which is a film franchise on the Disney Channel. And it's kind of shaken a lot of young stars in Hollywood as well. It was just epilepsy is kind of what got him in the end. He had a seizure in his sleep, and his family found him in bed.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Terrible.
Oh,
news.
My God. 20 years old.
20 years old.
Let's go happier, shall we?
Let's go happier, because we're trying to be happy today, although we're not having a particularly good day. Lion King reaction at the moment. The European premiere is on Sunday.
It is. It's all the stars are coming in for it. Beyonce and Seth Rogen and Elton John and Pharrell, who's helped out with the music. They're all coming to London on Sunday for the European premiere. I'll be covering that, and I can't wait. I've literally walked out of the screening for the film right now. So, do you want my first reaction?
Yes,
please. Yes,
it's great. I loved it.
And
really good.
Sorry, Jamie. I was just going to say. Now, Beyonce wrote a new song for the film, and it's looking like everyone's screaming for it to be Oscar nominated. Is that right?
It's decent. It's a really good song, and they kind of transition it into the film pretty seamlessly. Obviously, there's all the old classics in there as well. But then three quarters of the way through, Beyonce's song Spirit comes on.
Yeah.
It totally holds up in the film. It's a very nice, you know, good African beat in this, as like a sound as well. And I think if it gets some Oscar recognition, which I think it would deserve to.
Yeah.
And
what about the fact that it's all, you know, it's not animated. It's all CGI'd. But the same sort of thing as the Jungle Book was a few years ago, right?
Yeah, so by the same director, Jon Favreau, and, you know, you can't tell that you're watching a CGI film. It really is. It's amazing, the technological advancements. Obviously, it's essentially the same film as the cartoon, but because of the way it's shot and the way it looks, it just has a bit more weight to it. And I think, like, a bit of an emotional gravitas is lifted somewhat because it just looks so realistic.
Yeah. Okay, listen, we've got to talk about it. I don't like talking about it, but I've been talking about it. We had Tamer Hussein on earlier on. his daughter, Belle Hussein, is in there. So we've got to talk about it. So Amy leaves with her head held high. Is this true?
This is true, yeah. This was the thing that got everyone in the fields this week. She had been rejected in the villa and, you know, felt that there was nothing left for her there. So left on a bit of a high note. It was a great storyline for the show. People got really into it. And tears were shed online. People have come out in support of her. People have come out against Curtis, who essentially dumped her. And, that's kind of, you know, reinvigorated the series because it wasn't doing as well as last season until the last few weeks. But, this is just another good narrative to run through this island this year.
Right, okay. So, listen, I can't really talk anymore, Love Island. I'll be honest with you, Jamie.
You love it.
Every week.
Listen, I just wanted to go on the fact Amy left the other night. And we said to Tamer earlier, like, we've been friends with Tamer for 20-odd years, and I said it must be difficult having your daughter in that programme. You've got to watch your daughter. Now, Amy left the other night.
Sounds like the Sound of Music's on in the background.
It certainly does. It's just that I saw Amy left the other night and I saw that her dad did an interview and he said it was painful for him to watch her crying in there all the time. You know, you've got a feel for your kid, haven't you?
Isn't it strange that obviously people go into the island kind of expecting a bit of fame, but then we see on This Morning and Good Morning Britain and in magazines and in newspapers that brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers are all like brought in to talk about their child's performance on this reality show. Like it's become a massive family affair. And obviously you had Tamer on earlier as well, talking about his daughter in the villa. It's like, it's a strangely, you know, reaching show at the moment. It's like no one's safe from Love Island, not even you two.
Yeah,
we're all talking about it.
Well, to be fair, I've been watching it, and I sort of watched it because Tamer's daughter had gone in it, and then the girl that's just gone in it, she's at my gym every day, Francesca.
Really?
Yeah, so I see her quite a bit, and then someone said, oh, you know that girl, she's going in there. So I've started to watch it a little bit. But we had the recoupling last night, didn't we? And yes. That was a bit painful with Francesca choosing Curtis and leaving Maura on the bench, if you like, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't think she'll be the most popular person at your gym when she comes out, because a lot of people are rooting for Curtis and Maura to get together. She's a good spoke in the works, isn't she? She's going to just stop that love story, you know, before it starts, and again, keeps it going on. We're actually not too far from the final as well. Monday, July the 29th is when it'll all come to an end. You guys will be safe from Love Island for another year. So yeah. Not long to go.
Now, listen, it's British Summertime weekend. It's the final weekend. You'll be attending the Bob Dylan and Neil Young on Friday night. Tonight, actually, yeah?
I will, but there's a stark difference across this weekend. For some reason, Bob Dylan and Neil Young, it's not classed as a British Summertime event because Neil Young despises the sponsors, Barclaycard.
Right.
British Summertime sponsored by Barclaycard, but he said essentially, I won't do the performance if it's sponsored by Barclaycard because they're a fossil fuel funding entity, was his words. Oh. So for one day only, they're stripping all of the BST, they're stripping the Barclaycard sponsorship, taking it all down. So it's just known as Bob Dylan and Neil Young at Hyde Park. And then tomorrow, when Florence and the Machine come back and perform,
it goes back up.
Got it all back up, yeah. Quick turnaround.
Wow, that's incredible,
isn't
it? Power
by Neil Young, eh?
We never would have done that. We actually had Barclaycard book us to do Hyde Park last year if England got in the final. So we were going to we were booked to do it, and they wanted us to go on and sing the couple of football hits that we'd had, and we were going to be supporting Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing.
Instead, we ended up in Collier Row in a... in a working man's club.
England never got in the final. We ended up in a terrible gig. just talk to us a little bit about what happened at the weekend. Obviously, Barbara Streisand was on and Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
How did that go down?
Well, if you've looked online a bit, it seems like a lot of celebs were there enjoying the day as much as the punters as well. It was a really great weekend. One little interesting note from Stevie Wonder's performance. He chose that performance to announce to the crowd that he's going to take a break from music.
Wow.
He told everyone in the crowd that he's... Yeah, was it a kidney transplant?
Yeah.
He's having... he's got a donor all lined up. He's going to have the operation in September. So hopefully, you know, everything's in place and he should be fine. But he just, you know, it was an interesting one to hit home to the crowd there.
I'll tell you something, Jamie. Growing up, I mean, Belle and I are obviously the same age. Stevie Wonder was the biggest thing in music.
It was quite unique.
And we luckily saw the best of him, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like late 70s, 80s.
He's still just as popular. His British Summertime sold out in record time.
I bet
like
it
before
did, yeah.
any of the other stars which are there. His one sold out first.
Yeah.
Sold out the quickest it's ever done before. So, you know, obviously he's still got a lot of appeal. Yeah.
He influenced everybody. I mean, George Michael.
Certainly.
Elton John.
Yeah.
I think so many.
Prince.
Yeah. I mean, everybody.
I would say, by the way, I know a lot of people went to see Barbara Streisand and said it was absolutely fantastic. I threw a load of songs at them saying, did she sing this one? Did she sing that one? Apparently she only sung one, maybe two, from the Guilty album, which I was really surprised at.
You know what? I don't think I could name many Barbara Streisand songs. I know her as a figure, but like, couldn't name a single.
Really? Are you not a big
no,
fan,
but
Jamie?
No, it's one that I would have to agree. It's just that's the album that we sort of, because it was with Barry Gibb.
I prefer
Gibb.
Barbara the actress.
Do you really?
I love to sing, don't get me wrong, but I think she made some great films.
Still a great singer.
Mm.
I know her
predominantly as an actress as well, rather than a, you know,
yeah,
recording
and
actress.
A director, of course.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
talented.
Listen, any breaking news? Any breaking news at all?
Any gossip?
Having just come out of the Lion King premiere, I'm not up to date in the last 2 hours. I've been in a dark room, none for you.
Tell me, just Jamie, very quickly, what's it like when you go to these the private screenings? Who's in there with you?
It can take all sorts. Every now and then, it's just like other journalists from other publications. Sometimes you'll see like a notable film critic, like Mark Kermode's in there. I get a nice bit of kick out of that. Sometimes you see presenters from other shows, like Graham Norton, sometimes in there as well. Everyone has to go and see these films before you interview these celebrities
This is why I keep on at our bosses here to let Berlusconi do a film review every week. So I'm getting out and see a few films.
I knew there was
everyone loves a free thing.
Don't they?
He'll be wanting to do a review of McDonald's soon so he can get a free McDonald's.
No, you're not wrong there, my friend.
Listen,
what
Jamie,
did they say? If you say a product on the air, then you're more likely to have that company send you some free stuff of the product as a thank you. Start naming things, and maybe they'll get some stuff sent to you.
Double cheeseburger, they're very nice. Aren't they? Two, please, McDonald's, if you don't mind.
Two apple pies for 99p. Jamie, listen, have a wonderful weekend.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Just going back on this situation of beating Australia yesterday, first of all.
Always good to beat the Australians.
It felt great. There was lots of, if you got your WhatsApp groups, lots of WhatsApp messages flying around. We've stuffed the Aussies. We've smashed the Aussies. It was a real good feel factor about it last night. And it got me thinking about some of the fantastic times that we've had over the years. Now, we do get to a certain point and there's disappointment. Okay. I do remember when we won the Rugby World Cup. Okay.
Yeah, I remember that.
When Johnny Wilkinson
did the drop kick.
Okay. Now that was a
I was in my
one.
Own studio. I remember watching that. It was a fantastic moment.
Yeah. We got up early. I think it was early in the morning, and we had some friends come over, lived opposite us, and they said, "Come on, we'll watch it." And we watched that, right? Okay. Wasn't a massive rugby fan.
Repton Park, you wasn't.
I was at Repton Park in Chigwell. And it was a feel good time.
It was.
Now, a lot of the times we get to the feel good and we get to the semi or we get to the final. And we dropped the ball, okay?
I've been saying over the last few days, I don't want to spoil the party a little bit, but we've got to be realistic. New Zealand played fantastic against India. Mm. Nobody expected that. Mm. So, we've got to be a bit wary of them.
Okay, all right. But what I'm saying is we're in the final.
Yeah.
Last year, obviously, England got to the semi-final to the football.
Yes.
This year, the
semi-finals of the cricket they got last year.
Yeah, and this year the women got to the semi-finals. We always get somewhere near it.
That's right. As I always say, we're always the bridesmaids, never the bride.
Shall I tell you somebody who's never the bridesmaid?
Go on.
On five occasions,
yeah.
Our old mate Steve Redgrave.
Why?
Always won it. There was no disappointment for Steve.
Steve always won it, didn't he?
Five gold medals.
Wow.
Five Olympics. Powerful man.
He's powerful. He's
beautiful.
Lovely
man.
Fella.
Lovely fella.
We did gigs for him.
We did a lot.
Marvellous. Three, wasn't it?
But what I'm saying is, he never really got any disappointments, did he?
No.
he
must have done. I mean,
No. Every time a gold medal. Wow. Steve Redgrave, every time a gold medal. He never got what we feel, what the rest of us feel.
No.
We get to the semi-final and then we fall down.
I remember talking to him once and he said, I said, "So Steve, you've won five gold medals. Tell me a little bit about the training." He told me all about the training.
Because he used to have to inject his diabetes.
And he went through it all. It was about 10 minutes worth of it.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, I said to him, "So, Steve, do you miss it?" He just very quickly went, "No, I don't."
Yeah. Boy, I mean, that's a long time.
No, I don't.
At that point, we was in La Manga, and at that point, I think he was quite drunk.
Yeah, he'd had about 10.
Yeah.
10 beers.
Let's also, before we talk about some transfer news, we must speak about Peter Crouch. Peter Crouch, he won the world medal for being the tallest person on earth.
Yeah.
And he's retired today.
He's retired.
He's doing the adverts, isn't he? Where he keeps going in the bank.
Yeah, I think he looks well, actually. He looks very well.
Well,
you say he's not a good-looking man. I don't think he's a pleasant-looking fella.
There's a great interview that they did to him, because obviously he's got Abby, is a very nice, his wife. He's a beautiful beautiful woman.
Yes, I do like. Yes, she's, and she's, I love the Liverpool accent. You don't?
I don't. No.
I really do. Yeah.
And they said to Peter Crouch, "What do you think you would be if you wasn't a footballer?"
Yeah.
And he said, "A virgin."
Is that true?
Yeah.
Brilliant. What it's a great. That's a great. That's a
wonderful
one.
Yeah, yeah. But a lovely man, a beautiful man.
Beautiful man.
And I love the fact that when James Corden did that fantastic sketch.
It was a great sketch.
With the England team. All in the sort of.
In fact, I think we should get that up later on and play that a little clip of that.
We should do.
Yeah. We will do.
We'll try and get that. And when he goes through the whole team, and he says about Peter Crouch, he says, "Peter, you know, what's happened to the robot?" When he's used to celebrate a goal, doing the robotics, you know, sort of take the glass, but cardboard box, and then he said to Peter Crouch, he said, "Whenever I look at you, Peter, everything about you tells me you're a rubbish footballer." But of course he wasn't. And look, the fact is, what Peter Crouch offered, he offered height.
He did.
Okay. And
he most definitely offered height.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, you go into a game and you've got skillful strikers, you've got your bruiser strikers, you've got your one who get your elbows out, get stuck in. He offered something different. If in doubt, put the ball in the box, stick it about 50 foot in the air, and Peter Crouch will get on the end of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got Alex Owen, friend of the show, sports journalist. Alex, sad day, really, that Crouch has retired, isn't it?
It is. It's the end of an era, really. I think, as you guys were saying there, he's such an engaging guy as well. Yeah. I mean, he's a great character. He's done a lot for a lot of clubs as well. You mentioned the advert going through all the clubs. He's had more clubs than Rory McIlroy. It's incredible. He's left a mark on each one of them as well. And
yeah.
And I mean, if you just have to look, he's played in Champions Leagues. He's played in World Cups.
Yeah.
He's obviously done wonders in the Premier League as well. He's had. For someone that didn't look a lot like a footballer, he's had a very, very, very good career.
Absolutely.
He can look back with a lot of pride.
Alex, do you think now he's jacked it in, his wife will leave him?
Do you know what? I was going to mention that quote as well. That's one of my all-time favourites, I think, having a footballer. He's got quick wit as well, which I guess he's probably needed to sharpen over the years. But
yeah.
I hope not for his sake. They seem very happy. And he's a fantastic, fun guy.
Absolutely. She adores him.
Alex, I'll go back. It must be almost 20 years ago. Myself and John hosted the National Five-A-Side Championships on Sky Sports. Mm-hmm. And what they did, they had teams from all over the country enter into it. And then they got to play a professional team, or made up of pros. And at the time, Peter Crouch was playing in it. And we didn't even know who he was. I think it was Peter Crouch and Glenn Johnson, strangely enough. Mm. And we didn't know who Peter Crouch was. And they said, "Oh, he's from Aston Villa. The 5 million they reckon he's worth. 5 million. As if like it was like, you know, like, what's he called? Dr. Evil, where he puts his dick goes.
And the ransom is $1 million.
That's what it was like. It's like 5 million for this really tall fella.
Million.
Really, with his sort of qualities now at the height of his career, he'd probably go for 60-70 million, wouldn't he?
I think so. If you add up all his cumulative transfers, he probably adds up to about $100 billion as well. He certainly racked them up. I think the first time he went, he started off at Spurs, obviously, and came to the set up, went off to QPR for, I think it was £1 million then, even when he was a prospect. And he's racked them up, definitely coming to Spurs again and Liverpool's and Stokes. He's definitely, I reckon he must be three figures in terms of millions over his career anyway.
Let's talk about the transfers, Alex. Lukaku to Inter?
Well, this one's rumbling around because Roma have apparently sneaked in for him as well. I mean, it looks as though this might actually happen. I think United probably want the money. They certainly don't want to take a loss on him. They paid $75 million for him, and whether or not you agree with how much they paid for him, they're not going to really want to make a loss over the course of two seasons. Listen, he'd be excellent in Italy. He would be fantastic for Inter, I'm sure. But the problem with Italian clubs these days is they don't have the money, the financial muscle that the English clubs do with the TV deals and everything. And
strange, isn't it?
It's going to be interesting. I think Inter have come in officially. I think they're definitely in pole position. Funnily enough, they're actually out playing against United next week in Shanghai in this international sort of the pre-season friendly competition they have around the world. And I've got a feeling that might be when it gets thrashed out, perhaps towards the back end of next week, if at all, because obviously the officials will all be in the same place. He'll be there as well, perhaps for a medical, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I can see it running on for the saga will run on for another few days, but I reckon it might go through. United want, obviously, more time to spend the money if they get it. That's the big thing.
Obviously, Johnny calls him Lukaku. I call him Lukaku. How do you think he'd be received over there? Because I've got to tell you, when he played for Everton, I used to dread West Ham playing against him because he was an absolute beast. He was a handful, and I think he scored virtually every time he played against West Ham. When he joined Man United, just not the same player.
No, it's a strange one. I've often, you see that a lot sometimes when players go from middle of the table teams, sort of when you go to a big club. He looked a little lost when he was at Chelsea. He looked a little lost on occasion at United. But when he's been at West Brom, he was on loan at West Brom and scored the hat-trick against Man United, I think, that perhaps got him that move in the first place to Everton. He's obviously got a lot of pace and power. He's a confidence player. And I mean, if he's the main man, that's the problem with United. He's not the main man. He's not the biggest character. It's not just him they've got to try and set him up. And I've got a feeling if he went to it's a tier down. Inter these days is a tier down from Man United. And I've got a feeling he would be the main man there and he'd be a roaring success in Serie A.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about the sort of Italian clubs, really, that, you know, you've got to think when Paul Gascoigne went to Lazio.
Yeah.
And when, I think, David Platt went to Sampdoria, Des Walker went to Sampdoria, that they was like, it was like massive that they're going to play in Italy.
Yeah,
it's like huge wages, you know.
Yeah.
And now what you're saying is they can't compete with us.
And they really can't. One of the sticking points over any deal with Lukaku is how the finance is structured, because I don't think Inter have a lot of money. I think they were talking about sort of £10-15 million as a down payment, and then have to pay it off in instalments for years and years. So that's obviously not
sounds
something
like a student loan.
It does a little bit, but with financial fair play, it's all very important to try and get that right as well. It's a tricky one. Business is very complex these days, and particularly it seems whenever Man United are involved in it.
Yeah, it's really. So I just remember a story going back and thinking. I think Des Walker, who was an absolutely fantastic defender for England, then went to Sampdoria and David Platt around about similar sort of times. And you're talking 30, 35 grand a week then. And that was huge money when everyone else over here was on 3 and 4, 5 grand a week, you know. And now they can't muster up the money to bring the big stars there. But there again, you listen, like you just said, maybe Lukaku is not, maybe he's not good enough for Man United.
Mm.
That's a good question. There's a few players that you would think on their day certainly are, but it's all about having the right blend and the right mix. And it's not been a great couple of years for Man United. Let's be honest, it's probably been a pretty toxic environment in the team and the dressing room, and they don't really seem to be very settled. Perhaps were it to have been more settled, he might have been more of a success. But hey, he's still scored goals. He's come in. He's been a bit of a flat track bully for United. He's scored a lot of goals against kind of the weaker teams in the Premier League. But it's all about him. Get him in the right team, the right setup, the right manager, definitely. And I'm sure he'll start firing again.
What about his mate?
Yeah. What about Pogba?
Pogba, yes. That's every week, I think, for the last couple of months, that one's come up. Interesting. This is a similar one. There's a bit of a merry-go-round. Every summer you get this one where there's one transfer which you expect will kind of kick off a little cycle of things.
Are you a fan, Alex?
I'm a fan of what he can do on his day. Right. Him as a guy, I don't know him. I've never met him.
Right.
He doesn't strike me as the kind of bloke I'd want in my team, perhaps.
No.
A lot of people talk very highly of him as within the United camp, the young players there, and they kind of look up to him. But I don't know. It's the stuff with the Rolls Royce and things like picking him up and being fast. And there's a lot of things that don't sit very well with me. But no one cares about my opinion. I've got a feeling it's the Real Madrid and Pogba. It's whichever way Real decide to spend the money they've got left. If they go for Pogba, then the merry-go-round will kick off, because then I think you can probably say that Christian Eriksen definitely won't be going to Real Madrid. Juventus won't be getting Pogba either, so perhaps Juventus start to come in for Christian Eriksen. There'll be a few little moving pieces once someone makes a decision, but again, he's down there in Australia. I fully expect him to get involved in the first friendly for United tomorrow. I expect he'll probably be involved in that. He'll want minutes in his legs, and he's wearing a kit. We're going to mention, I think, Wilfried Zaha in a minute. Wilfried Zaha's not in the kit launch for Crystal Palace, but Pogba is in the kit launch for Man United. I don't know if we can read anything into that.
Listen, Alex, before we go, we must talk about this the signing. Barca signed a 16-year-old from West Brom. Now, he's never had a professional contract, obviously. I was 16. What about that one?
Louis Barry, remember the name, guys.
He
only turned 16 last month.
Wow.
And, he is hot property. Listen, the Juventus, Bayern, Man United, as we mentioned, all sniff around. And PSG apparently actually went through as far as giving him a medical. He basically wasn't going to stay at West Brom. He's been there for 10 years. They've taught him everything. But he's outgrown, by the age of 16, he's outgrown West Brom. And listen, when you get Barcelona come knocking for you, there's There's a fantastic picture of him holding up this Barcelona shirt. This kid with his hair, and he honestly, he looks like he's bought it from a stall in Magaluf High Street. He looks very, very much out of place. So young, but
wow.
He's got a 3-year contract. He's gonna be playing at La Masia, which is like the cathedral of academies in the world.
Have you seen him play, Alex? Have you seen him play?
Do you know, I mean, there's some videos of him playing for England under-16s that, I mean, he scored goals at every level he's played at. The under-15s, he was prolific. He stepped up to under-16s. He was actually playing for West Brom's under-23s last season at the age of 15. He's going to go into the Barca under-19s. Listen, there's a lot of hype about this.
Is he a striker?
He's a striker, yeah. He can play outside on the right as well. He's, what you call it, an old outside right.
Yeah.
Coming in, and he's scoring goals. And listen, if you've got that amount of foundation, there's a reason why everyone's sniffing around after you.
Sure,
Louis
it's
Barry.
Gonna be really
Louis Barry, eh?
Yeah.
Louis Barry, yeah. He's actually qualified for Ireland as well. He's played at the youth football for Ireland. So hopefully this is another Declan Rice and keep hold of him.
Don't start the Declan Rice situation again. that lovely Irish player who plays for England. He's always English for us now. Listen, it's as always, Alex, it's fantastic talking to you. Just very quickly, obviously, I think you're a Spurs fan, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, Ericsson.
Very quickly, in 10 seconds, do you think Ericsson will go?
Because it all depends on Pogba. Do you know what? I've got a feeling he's gonna stay at Spurs and negotiate a new deal.
Really? Yeah. It feels like a Spurs player, doesn't he? I wouldn't like to see him anywhere else. I think he's a beautiful footballer. Alex, as always, friend of the show, Alex Hode. Have a wonderful weekend. Sports journalist and friend of the Bell and Sterling show.
Bell and Sterling on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.